In his first State of the Union this week, Donald J. Trump made good on his campaign promises to rescind his predecessor's order to close Guantanamo Bay and instead, quote, fill it with bad dudes.
I just signed, prior to walking in, an order directing Secretary Mattis to re-examine our military detention policy and to keep open the detention facilities in Guantanamo Bay.
The prison camp was first established in 2002, and for many years, lawyers representing the inmates and journalists trying to report on them were kept in the dark about Gitmo operations. But in 2015, the world did get a peek inside the prison with the publication of Guantanamo Diary, the heavily redacted account of interrogation, imprisonment, and torture written by inmate Mohamedou Ould Slahi. A 29-year-old Mauritanian engineer, Slahi was first detained in the year 2000 for his supposed connections to the Millennium Bomb plot. Though quickly cleared in that matter, he was nonetheless kept in custody at the prison for 14 years. Writer and human rights activist Larry Seams edited the book Mohamedou wrote while imprisoned. A year later, Slahi was finally released, and he and Seams spent months unredacting the manuscript. When I spoke to Seams last fall, I asked him to explain why Slahi was originally suspected of trying to blow up LAX Airport.
He briefly moved to Canada in 1999, got there just about the time that this guy named Ahmad Rassam was caught coming into the United States with a trunk load of explosives to try to blow up LAX Airport. And because they had gone to the same mosque, Mohamedou fell under suspicion. He actually was living, working peacefully in Mauritania through 9/11. After 9/11, the United States picked up Mohamedou, and then on November 20th, 2001, put him on a rendition plane to Jordan, and that began his ordeal in U.S. custody.
14 years in Guantanamo with neither evidence nor even a theory of connection to terrorism or anything else untoward.
He wasn't just mistreated in Guantanamo. He was one of the two most tortured people in Guantanamo. Torture that included extreme isolation, deprivations, humiliations, sexual harassment, a fake kidnapping, and death threats to his family. That happened between 2003 and 2004. By the end of that time, of course, they had decided that he wasn't who they thought he was. And they kept him in this isolation hut that they had dragged him into for this interrogation. It was completely sealed off from the camp. But they began to give him, you know, writing supplies, and he had a new guard team come in that was much friendlier to him. What he did during that time was remarkable. He sat down in this desk that he had in his cell and over the period of about 8 months, wrote in a series of segments that he sort of framed as letters to his lawyers so that they could be transferred to them safely and not destroyed, this manuscript for Guantanamo Diary, which was 466 pages, handwritten in English, his fourth language.
And you edited this into book form, and it was published, but heavily redacted by the government. How heavily?
Well, there were about 2,400 black bars that had been imposed on the text. You know, his lawyers fought in sort of secret litigation that was connected to his habeas corpus case to get the manuscript declassified. Finally, in 2012, they called me and said, we have this declassified version of the book. Handed it to me. It was a PDF file of this handwritten manuscript with these 2,400 redactions that vary from pronoun length all the way up to multi-page redactions. My job was to navigate the challenge of this censorship.
Okay, that was then. This is now. You have unredacted the redactions. How were you able to reassemble his narrative?
I got the word that he was being released a year ago. I got a phone call from an Al Jazeera reporter, you know, who said he was going to the airport to meet Mohamedou. There had been no warning. He had been cleared for release earlier in the summer, but, you know, this was the waning days of the Obama administration. Nobody knew whether he'd get out or not. And there he was, apparently, landed in Mauritania. And 2 hours later, I was driving, and my phone rang, and it was Mohamedou. He was exactly the voice that I knew from the book. He was relaxed. He said, hey, Larry, how are you doing? 2 weeks later, I went to Mauritania and visited him. One of the very first things he said was he really thought he owed his readers the whole story? Is it possible to do an unredacted version? Now, the easiest way to do that, of course, would be to get the original manuscript back from the U.S. government. But that was not going to happen. That will probably never be publicly released. Of course, Mohamedou knows the information that's under those redactions.
That doesn't strike me as being an easy process. How were you able to reassemble his narrative?
We sort of went from short to long. So, you know, the short redactions, he could just go through and he'd pencil them in. This is so-and-so, he knows who that is. But when you have a 7-page redaction that describes a polygraph exam, you know, how are we going to reconstruct that? We were asking each other a lot of interesting ethical questions about memory.
Because it's a tricky thing. Sometimes you don't know if you're remembering what happened or if you're remembering how you've reconstructed the memory.
Absolutely. So we had this really interesting just editorial conversation where he said to me one day, you know what we're doing? We're not unredacting, we're restoring in the way that you would restore an old building. His commitment all along is to be quite straightforward. So when he couldn't remember something, he was very honest with me. There were moments where he would say, I need some time with this one. I hadn't thought about this. You could see him remembering things.
What is there about the unredacted version of Guantanamo Diary that advances the story for the audience?
If you look at a redacted manuscript, your first question should be, who's hiding what from whom? Why is this redacted? Who's doing it? What are they hiding and who are they hiding it from? If there's one thing that all of these years of looking at censored documents about Guantanamo has taught me, it's that those redactions exist primarily to keep information from us, the American people. The process of the last 15 years since the beginning of the torture program has really been of trying to tear down these walls of censorship that have been built specifically to screen from the American people the crimes that have been done. To this day, no writer or journalist has ever been able to speak with a prisoner while they're in Guantanamo. I could have no communication with Mohamedou while I was working with the original manuscript and he was still in prison. The American public should be asking the question, well, wait, what am I not being allowed to see here?
You know, Larry, slavery is over, but it isn't over. It continues to reside in history and in the collective consciousness. The Trail of Tears, over but not over. Tuskegee, over but not over. McCarthyism, all of these horrific chapters of American history. And Guantanamo, which it seems to belong in that conversation of our darkest moments, it seems to me already to be fading from the public consciousness.
It does seem to me that we have a unique cultural challenge when it comes to accountability. I think it's partly because we're a country that was founded on this notion of looking forward, not backwards. But we have compiled and accumulated many, many layers of secrets and crimes over the years that we've not fully addressed, and we've not learned how important the process of addressing them is for us as individuals and as a culture. So I am worried about Guantanamo. 41 men are still incarcerated there. Thousands of American men and women are working there. And like you say, most of the country is not even thinking about it. We should do better in confronting our mistakes because it'll make us stronger. These crimes are damaging to our character and to our soul. The process of illuminating this darkness is one of repairing something in ourselves.
Larry, thank you.
You're welcome.
Larry Seams is a writer and human rights activist and editor of the Guantanamo Diary. For Mohamedou Ould-Slahi, the pages represent the darkest moments of his life. When we spoke last fall, I asked him what he was thinking 15 years ago when he voluntarily went to the local police station to answer a few questions.
I really wasn't afraid of the U.S. government back then because my only information about the United States of America is what I learned through movies and TV shows like Married with Children or Murder, She Wrote, Law and Order, and stuff like that. So I see that America is a country of law. If you didn't do anything wrong, you don't have anything to be afraid of.
And what did they want?
He told me, look, we don't know why the American government is so adamant. They told us to arrest you and they will come and interrogate you. We don't know why. I did not break any law. Why should I answer any questions? I don't have to cooperate with anyone if I didn't do anything wrong. Just try to play the hard ass, but it didn't work in my favor, I can tell you that much.
No, it manifestly did not work in your favor. You got sucked into this system, and you were eventually interrogated about the Millennium Bomb plot that they suspected you may have had a connection with. It immediately became clear to them that you could not possibly have been involved in that plot because you didn't show up until the people had already been arrested for trying to smuggle explosives over the Canadian border. And yet you were kept in custody.
This is the problem. What I call the Securitate apparatus, very much hijacking the democracy in the United States of America. They don't make mistakes. They don't come and say, you know what, we're sorry, we really thought you did it, and we really apologize, then try to mend the wrongs. That's not how it operates, especially outside the mainland. So they say, okay, maybe you didn't do it, but you must have done something else. And who is going to ask a second question about an Arab African guy kidnapped from Africa because he was trying to harm honest Americans? No one.
As it turns out, there were people who cared about you. There is this crazy paradox that while you were hidden from the world for 14 years in Guantanamo Bay without a voice, you were given a voice by various surrogates, lawyers, activists, Larry Seams in particular. I wonder how you even processed the idea of having so many allies fighting for you from within the very country that was depriving you of your basic liberty.
I don't define humanity as American and non-American. Just as decent people who want justice for everyone, who can look beyond your skin color or where you're born, and people who just hate themselves. No one helped me more than my good American brothers and sisters.
Mohamedou, anyone who has ever had psychotherapy knows the process of revisiting bad memories and how traumatic that can be. You endured not just bad memories, but 14 years of hell on earth. How hellish was the process of reliving it line by line, page by page?
I wasn't allowed to read the book when it was published 2 years ago because I wasn't allowed to see anything from the outside world. But my lawyer gave me back my redacted manuscript. I was allowed to see that. And when I took it in my hands, I was shaking because I did not want to read what I wrote years ago. I was so scared, so afraid. Because like you said, they say that subconscious does not know the difference between actual stuff and stuff that we think about. It's not easy. I'm not going to play the hero here. It was very painful work and a lot of thinking, spending night. What was this? What was I talking about here? And so, and with the help of my good friend and brother, Larry, we got the product that you have now.
Many of the reviewers of Guantanamo Diaries remarked on the spirit of your book, the tone, the absence of bitterness. How can you not be weighted down with bitterness and resentment and rage and even vindictiveness?
Because I want to win. I hate to lose to anyone. I figured if I'm a bitter person, if I give space to someone who doesn't deserve it in my head, I let them win. I will not help you destroy me.
So you're such a sore loser that you won't
give them the benefit
of your rage.
Absolutely. I don't have guns. I don't have planes. I don't have dictators around the world on my payroll. I don't have the media. All the above, the U.S. government has. So they define the narrative. They define who is good, who is bad. I don't have any of that. But I have one thing. I don't have to hate anyone. I don't have to vindicate what they say I am.
During the Obama administration, the fate of Guantanamo and those prisoners was the subject of an ongoing debate, hand-wringing, in the Obama White House about the conflict between trying to keep the homeland protected and also to afford basic human rights to detainees. There is no such tension in the current administration. Guantanamo is off the radar. What is your greatest fear about that?
I always hope and pray that they close Guantanamo Bay, because Guantanamo Bay is a travesty of justice. American people are better than that. And my fear, I hope that I'm wrong, is that America carry on this tradition of kidnapping and torturing people without the rule of law, and that they carry on the legacy of Guantanamo Bay, even expanding it, because now people start to accept it. And that is very, very fearsome to me.
Mohamedou, thank you very, very much.
God bless you. Thank you for having me.
Mohamedou Ould Slahi is the author of Guantanamo Diary, which is now available in its unredacted form. Thanks for listening to this podcast extra. If you want more OTM, sign up for our newsletter at onthemedia.org. Follow us on Facebook and on Twitter at onthemedia.